So when was the first time that you experienced resistance to Jim Crow?
Resistance to Jim Crow? Mm-hmm. Perhaps in 1960, maybe 65, right after the Civil Rights Act was signed into law, several teachers and I, after all week school was out and just the teachers were left at the school, and when lunchtime came, we decided we were going to go to one of the restaurants on the highway rather than to go over to the black restaurant. So we went there. Prior to that, they had had no blacks come into there. So that was my first real experience at going against, say, Jim Crow. Now, when I say first experience, I had been involved in the civil rights movement as a college kid, but, you know, like I went to rallies that were held, and I went to a state-supported college. Any state-supported college, the kids could not, were restricted from participating in anything like that because the state would cut the school's funds off. That was one of the things they held over the school's head. You keep your kids from participating. But being in Jackson, Mississippi, we went to, there was a private college on the north side of Jackson called Tougaloo College. And at Tougaloo, those students were very much involved. They are the ones who went and sat in at the library and got arrested and all of that downtown Jackson. Well, we participated any way we could with them without, you know, it being known. We gave them any kind of support we could. So now, I did that kind of thing as a student. And then here as a teacher, we all joined. We started out with going into these restaurants and places like that that had prior been all white. Then we started to join protest marches downtown and everything. So we had our share of.
Do you think that, and even before the civil rights movement, that there were, you know, other small forms of resistance that took place? And you could say that things like language or culture are, themselves can be used as resistance.
Oh yeah. Gee whiz, listen to the songs that people sing. Listen to the poems that writers wrote, you know, things like that. Those were resistance. These were songs of resistance or works of resistance against Jim Crow, yeah.
And in day-to-day life?
Beg pardon?
And in day-to-day life, you know, things that you or your parents or family would do?
Can't think of anything right offhand, no more than going about your daily job, you know, doing what you did. But maybe not in a resistive way. So, no more, no, not really.
Were there any attempts to organize blacks before the Civil Rights Movement or SNCC?
Before the Civil Rights Movement, black people were organized all over the United States. Do you realize when the NAACP was organized? February 1909. Black people have been organized for years against slavery, Jim Crowism, and what have you.
But in the Delta?
In the Delta, yes, very much so. Not myself, but in 1954, Aaron E. Henry started a chapter of the NAACP here in Coahoma County. And this was, now, Aaron had been a student out at the high school at the junior college, and his teacher, one of his teachers, introduced them to the NAACP at that time. This was back in the early 50s, and he started a youth group of the NAACP when he was in high school. And then after that, he graduated high school, went into the Army, stayed a year or two, and came back out. And in 1954, he organized the first branch of Coahoma County, Clarksdale, NAACP.
Were most people introduced to the NAACP through their teachers? Or?
No, I wouldn't think so. No, absolutely not. Most of them were introduced to the NAACP by other members of the NAACP, you know, because as I said earlier, most teachers were not allowed to openly admit to being members of the NAACP, although most of the teachers were members, but they kept it under wraps, so to speak.
Did you ever introduce anybody?
Oh, did I ever? As a matter of fact, I hope y'all got him on your list. His name is Samuel Irby. You're supposed to talk to him while you are here. He was one of the young men that came up through our ranks as a youth of the NAACP, and he led a group of students in protest at Clarksdale High. This was back in the early 60s, right after the Civil Rights Act and all that was signed. Yeah, so we introduced quite a few students to NAACP.
What do you remember about Freedom Summer?
Freedom Summer.
64.
64.
All the students from up north coming down and helping to register people?
At that time, I was working Freedom Summer. I was running a playground for the city. city had summer playgrounds on most of the school campuses, and I was running the playground there. But I recall all of the kids of your hue who came down, coupled with the kids of my hue, and they went through all around this county getting people registered to vote and things like that. They lived in the homes with blacks that they were down, you know, and while they were down here. This man, Aaron Henry, of whom I spoke, was also the president of the state of Mississippi NAACP. He was the state president, county president here, too. And he remained the president of the state NAACP until his health just got so bad he couldn't go. And that was maybe like in 80 something, back in the 80s, he passed. But anyway, by that time he had become a state representative from this district. So that's the kind of thing that the NAACP, and I know you are probably aware that he, Fannie Lou Hamer, and a group led a delegation to Washington, D.C., to the Democratic National Convention, and they challenged the Mississippi delegation for seats at the convention and won it. Then after that convention, then Mississippi became a two-party Democratic Party, the Regular Party and the Freedom Party, it was called, the Democratic Freedom Party. And we set up an office, and when I say we, I was, by this time, I was fully involved in the working with Aaron and the NAACP, and we set up an office on Issaquena Avenue, called the Mississippi Democratic Freedom Party. And that party stayed in existence for several years. We had a chair and co-chair of the party. And right now in this county, we have a chair and co-chair of the Democratic Party in this county.
Did you know Mr. Henry before they went to the DNC?
Did I know him? Or did I ever know him? I knew him, I've known Mr. Henry since 57. Yeah. When I first came to Clarksdale, he had the 4th Street drugstore. He was a pharmacist by trade. Mm-hmm. And he had a drugstore, and all the teenagers used to hang out at the drugstore, you know. Go in, you sit down, you order some ice cream, or you order a cherry Coke and some naps. You know, that was the hangout for teenagers. And that's when I first learned Aaron Henry. I really became active in the NAACP, as I told you a few minutes ago, after I left the teaching profession, because I had no strings holding me back then, you know, to take my livelihood away from me so that I could feed my family. So, and the job that I was on now, you know, it had nothing to do with the school system and that kind of thing, and I was free to live out my desires. And that's when I really got involved heavily.
Did you notice a difference in Mr. Henry after he came back from the DNC?
No, not any different, because Aaron always was, and that's one thing I liked about Aaron. Aaron was dogged in what he did, and he never got angry. You know what I mean? He would, these are his words he used to say when we would go to negotiate a situation with the powers to be. He would say to them, and in his own words, in trying to imitate his voice, "Now, we didn't come over here looking for no fight, but we damn sure ain't running for more." You know, he was that kind of person. He was outspoken, straight out, but he didn't, he stuck to his guns, but he did not raise no whole lot of hell or anything like that. He told you where he was coming from, and he stuck with that. Yeah.
During your years in activism, who did you look up to?
Aaron. Looked up to Aaron. I always looked up to Aaron because he was the one that I was close to and the one that helped to mold all of us around this town. Now, when folk like Martin would come to town or Ben Hooks, Jesse Jackson, all of those guys were doing their thing in other parts of the country. Well, Aaron was the one doing his thing here and in the state of Mississippi. But then from time to time, they would bring those other guys into town, and all of them were part of our clique. That's who we were around. I've met Martin personally. I've met Jesse. I've graced the stage with Jesse Jackson. I graced the stage with Ben Hooks and all the big boys. As a matter of fact, I introduced Jesse. Yeah. But I had my opportunity to be around a lot of guys, but the one that I looked up to was Aaron.
How do you describe him as a person? I mean, other than, you know, what you said earlier.
Well, very smart when it came to the law. Very smart in the law. Very powerful when it came to contact. I've seen Aaron pick up the telephone, call Washington and call the Capitol and call a congressman or a senator office, and they say, "Well, the senator is so and so and so." "Well, tell him Aaron Henry's on the phone and talk to him." For instance, Hubert Humphrey. You ever heard that name?
Oh, yeah.
I've seen him. I've sat right across the table from him, just like we're sitting here, and he pick up the phone and call Humphrey's office and said, "Well, just tell him Aaron Henry Clarkdale, Mississippi, won't talk to him." That's just the way he talked. In a few seconds or so, he's talking to the senator. That's right. There isn't a president, there wasn't a president that I can recall that he did not have a relationship with. John F. Kennedy, pictures to show to prove it, in his office, shaking hands with him, just like you and I are here, talking at the desk, or across the desk from pictures to show it. Lyndon Johnson, Jimmy Carter, I never will forget the one of the men at the press chided him for calling Jimmy Carter. Jimmy said, "I don't care how good of friends he is with Jimmy Carter, just because he knows him that well, he should give him respect because he's the president." And Aaron's response was, "Hell, he's my friend." Sorry. He was a great man. Aaron was tough.
What were you trying to achieve in your personal activism? What were your goals for the African American community?
What you see in my chest? The dream that Martin had, the reality we are living today. That's what I'm trying to achieve. Equal rights. Same if the same, that somebody asked Medgar Evers, I know you know the name Medgar.
Oh, yeah.
He had a brother named Charles. Charles is down in Jackson, Lafayette, Mississippi right now. And if somebody asked him after Medgar was dead, you know, Charles became active, very active in the movement. And one of the reporters, just like you were interviewing me, was interviewing him, and he asked him, "Well, Charles, what do y'all want?" He said, "What y'all got?" "We don't want no more, no less. We want the same thing y'all got. And that's freedom. Right to choose just like you do. We don't want no more." That's what I was looking for. What belongs to me. My God-given rights, my silver rights. That's all I ever wanted. I ain't wanted to live next door to nobody. I just want to be free. If I wanted to do that, I want to be free to do that, if that's what I want. Live any way I want to live. And don't be treated any different from anybody else.
So do you think that those goals have been achieved?
We're working on them. We're working on them. They are not totally achieved. But boy, but how did a little old poem go? It said, "Lord, I ain't all that I want to be. And I ain't all that I ought to be. I'm a whole lot better than I used to be." So that's the way it is with this, with this right thing. It ain't all that it ought to be. And it ain't all that I want it to be. But man, it's a whole lot better than it used to be. Yeah.
Is there anything else you guys want to ask? You have anything else you'd like to say?
No. I've said it. If you don't have any more questions, I don't have any more to say.
Well, hope it wasn't too long.
No problem with me, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
No problem at all with me.
Over initial 25.